This is part two of the success call with Patrick Tuttle.
You mentioned TTI Property Management. Have you set up a separate company to run your property management division?
We did. We set up an LLC years ago. And back when Star Power was in existence, Howard Britton did such a great job. Rest his soul for passing recently. But he did such a great job in interviewing top agents around the country, and you're doing a great job taking over where he left off, that I heard other agents that set up their businesses as a corporation, whether it be an LLC or a C-Corp or whatever it was, but for liability protection, they set up one or the other instead of working as a sole proprietor. So I took that advice early on, and we set up an LLC so that we could operate the property management and remove that liability from me personally, but rather put it onto the corporation.
While we're talking about organizational structure, you're working for a broker. Are you the broker owner of the company?
No, I am the broker owner of TTI Property Management, but I am not the broker owner of RE/MAX Real Estate Group. I am a broker, licensed broker in the state of Texas. I could go out on my own and open up my own individual shop, but I found benefit to being with the franchise. And this is not a plug for RE/MAX, but it's worked out for me because I'm in an office. We've got 25 other licensed agents, and they don't have property management experience. And many times they'll just come down the hall and say, I've got this seller at this address. They can't sell. Will you manage their property? And we say, yeah, we'd be happy to. And it's worked out very good. But I don't want to be responsible for the lights coming on and for the copier when it breaks down. I just want to be able to utilize it.
You did not have to put your property management business under the RE/MAX broker. You didn't have to get his or her permission to set this up and structure it and put up to the trust accounts and so forth. You did it outside of the sales brokerage side.
That's correct. My broker, the managing broker for our RE/MAX office, didn't want to do property management. So I said, will you allow me to? And they said, we'd be happy for you to do it because we're tired of sending these referrals elsewhere. And it's allowed us to keep the client in-house. And if one of our agents down the hall brings me a seller and says, here we have Joe and Mary seller, and they can't sell their house on Elm Street, will you manage it? And we'll say, absolutely, we'll be happy to do so. And then the next question, originally the next question was, well, what happens when they want to go back to sell? And I say, I'm going to give it right back to you. We're not going to hold on to that because you have that relationship established with them. We want to make that relationship better by serving them for however long it is. But I also want to keep the relationship between me and you, the other agent. I want to keep that good, so you'll bring me more property management leads, and I'll give it right back to them when it comes time to sell. And if they sell it, great. God bless them. We've both benefited, and the one that's benefited the most has been the property owner because we've been able to serve them for a period of time in renting the property, turning it back over to be sold, and then the other agent will be able to help them sell it. Doesn't happen that often, but that's what the commitment that I give to the agents locally, whether they come in my office or they come from another agent or another brokerage outside my office. And we have a lot of them, too, where a Coldwell Banker agent down the street, they don't have property management in their office. So they call me up and say, we've got this seller. Will you help them? And I'll say, you bet I will. And when they go back to sell, I give it right back to them, and that builds that relationship with that other agent.
When other agents refer you property management business, do you pay a referral fee?
We do. It's small. It's $200, but they're happy about that because they've got the commitment from me that in the future, that sale is going to come back to them, and they got $200 out of it. They wouldn't have gotten anything if they would have just let it go. So bought them lunch a couple of times, maybe bought a new handbag for the ladies, whatever it is, but it's a nominal fee. Again, we don't make a whole lot of money off of our property management, so I can't pay out a whole lot. So $200 is what we've decided was a good fee, and everybody has accepted that. They've just been more than thankful to say, hey, we appreciate what you do.
Is your property management business just breaking even, or is it kicking off enough money to either pay you or to pay for some of your overhead on your sales side?
It's profitable. It in fact covers the overhead that we have on the sales side plus. So it is profitable, and the sales side ends up being a windfall because I've got my base costs covered by the property management business.
While you've been doing all this property management over the last few years, have you discovered any tricks to the trade? In other words, how to maybe rent a property faster or for more money, or have tenants make repairs? Any unique tricks that you've come up with?
Well, in our market, we have a cooling system, which in the Southwest, our friends in the Southwest will know about this, but something called evaporative cooling. Have you heard of that?
Sure.
Okay, so that's fairly prominent here in El Paso. But if you can find a home that has refrigerated air conditioning, it'll rent faster than the evaporative cooling. And that's just a comfort issue because of the climate that we have. There are a couple of months in the summer where we call it our monsoon season, where the humidity will be at 50 to 70%. Now, in the desert where I live, that's high. In other parts of the country, you're going, hey, that's a dry day, and we're enjoying the low humidity at 50%. Not where I live. Today, it's about 6%. It's very, very low. Refrigerated air conditioning is a plus. So if the owner can afford to put refrigerated air conditioning in, that is a huge way to attract a better tenant. Another way is just to have a good, clean property. It's proven time and time again, just like in sales, if you'll clean the property up, change the carpet when it needs to be changed, paint the walls when they need to be painted, and just keep it in good condition, it'll rent 10 times faster than a dirty property will. So it's worth it to put fresh paint on the walls, fresh carpet on the floors, and have a professional service come in and clean it. That's what we do typically. Now, the next thing that we're going to do has to go with the price. And rental properties, it's amazing what $25 in some of these properties will do for one tenant over another. Tenants will work their budgets, and they will look at their budget and say, I can't afford to go at, say, $1,300 a month, but $1,275, I'm okay there. And if we can get it rented at $1,275 inside 2 weeks instead of waiting for $13 for a month, we've got a win-win for everybody because we've got a tenant in that property. That property is now performing. It's bringing in income, and it's protected because you've got somebody in there and you're not going to have vandalism on that property.
So try to end your rents in $75 increments?
I wouldn't say that that's the key, but looking at it and being negotiable on the rents, not holding out on trying to get a higher dollar number when you got somebody in front of you that can take the property and take it off the market and get you income in there. But it really goes down to looking at what the market will bear on that price, just like in the sales side. If the market says it'll sell for $150,000, if you price it at $149,900, you're probably going to sell it very quickly. If you price it at $169,000, you're not going to get a whole lot of looks. So look at that market and be clear on what the competition is doing, because that's where it really comes down to it. You're not worried so much about what people got in the past, but what are the other similar properties asking? Because that tenant is going to look at your property, they're going to look at the one right down the street, and the one across the street. And if those have a better property and the price is less, the tenant will take it every time.
How do you keep your finger on the pulse of the rental rates?
Doing market analysis. The same way that we would do it on sales, we have to look at what's available, how many homes got rented, looking at an absorption rate. And we want to know how many properties similar to this one have rented in the last 30, 60, and 90 days. We don't go any further back than 90 days in the rental market. And then we also try to look at our troop movements when we've got either a deployment where troops are leaving El Paso or a redeployment when they're coming back to El Paso from an overseas assignment or something like that. And we'll see rent rates fluctuate as much as $100 a month on a property based on troop movements. It's kind of interesting to watch there.
You're finding this data where? In your MLS or some other source?
Yes, we're finding it in our multiple listing service. So the same way in our multiple listing service, we have many different criteria that we can search for. single-family residential for sales or residential rental for the rental properties. You just do a market analysis. Look at what's going on in the last 3 months. Look at how many comparable properties are out there. And say, if I've got two potential tenants in the next 30 days and I've got 16 properties out there, well, I've got 8 months' worth of supply. So, Joe, Mary, what do you want to do? Well, we need to get this house rented ASAP. All right, fine. These guys are priced at $1,300 a month. Let's price you at $1,275 and see if we can attract one of those two tenants in the next 30 days.
Do you get market rent data from any other source other than the MLS?
No. I'm sure that there are subscription services that you could pay for out there, but I just go to the MLS. I'm a pretty simple guy when it comes to that, and that's the best source of information for me on the sales side. It's also the best source of information for me on the rental side.
If an agent was thinking about starting a rental department or a rental branch of their business, do you have any final thoughts, any advice for them?
Well, the first thing that I would say is that you need to set up systems to help you serve both your landlords and your tenants. Without a system in place, you're always going to be running behind. But if you've got a system for every little step of the way, then all you've got to do is turn that system on and let it work. It's just like going down to McDonald's, and when you look up at the menu and say, I want a number one, if that's a Big Mac and an order of fries, and the cashier behind the counter says, do you want to supersize that? That's all that has to be asked. So when you've got that system in place, let the system work for you. And that's one of the best things about your organization and what you're doing is that you're picking the brains of people across the country and they're revealing their systems so that guys like me can learn from them. And I'm happy to share any way that I can. But that system is vitally important to living a sane life when you're doing property management.
Patrick, let's do this. Let's move now over to the sales side of your business. You said the majority of your business is coming in from sphere of influence, referrals from past clients. Let's talk about that. Do you have a database of past clients and sphere of influence? And if so, how big is it?
We do. I use Top Producer as my database manager, and we love Top Producer. It's a great program. We've used other ones, but we always came back to Top Producer. In my Top Producer database, I've got several different databases or different segments of my database. The one that I communicate with most often is what I call my newsletter list, and I'm sending them a monthly newsletter via snail mail, and I've got a mailing service that we help out on doing that. And then they're also subscribed to the Top Producer Market Snapshot. Realtor.com has a email edition of a newsletter. RE/MAX has an edition of a newsletter. They're getting hit via newsletter email about 3 times a month. And then we also have the snail mail that goes out. The majority of my database, which is about 2,700 people in there, just get the email version. But my personal list of people that I've been working with for a long time, friends, family, sphere of influence, that list is at about 625 people, and they get a newsletter with a personalized cover letter on that each month. And then within that group, I have another segment that I call my raving fans, and my raving fan group is about 130 individuals, and they will get a newsletter plus an additional letter and a item of value each month. So depending on where you fall in my database, I'm either getting you 3 to 4 times a month via email and snail mail or 5 times a month via email and snail mail.
You went through that a little quick. I was trying to take notes. I apologize. I think I might have missed something. But you said you had 625 people in your tight sphere of influence, 130 people you called raving fans. Was there another group?
Well, the total group that is in my database, and that's about 2,700, give or take, in the total group. Now, that includes lists that I've compiled. For example, I've got a list of physicians that are in there that we would do a direct mail to offer a service to them. Whether it's buying rental properties or something like that. We've got attorneys for probate where we want to send out and say, hey, if you've got folks that are going through probate, you need an agent, You can send them to us. We'll be happy to take care of them. But they're not on my personal list, my sphere of influence of net people that I could walk up to them and say, "Hi, Joe, how you doing today?" Some of these people we don't know. It's just that we compile the list, put them in there. And then through our RE/MAX website and also through topproducerrealtor.com, if somebody goes onto my website, then they're going to put in their name and their email address, and I collect those people as leads. They get put into my database as well. And I don't have a clue who these people are. It's somebody that just came through my website looking for properties. I accepted them as a lead, and now they get our information back into their inboxes once a month through either RE/MAX or through Top Producer, Realtor.com, or one of those other systems that's out there.
Your personal list, the 625 people, who is in there? Are these your past clients, your friends? How did you put together this list? Who's in this list of 625 people?
It started with people that I went to church with and friends of my wife. Now, I'm a transplant to El Paso. We moved here in 2000, in February of 2000, and I was working with the job that I bought. I was working that for the first 8-9 months that we were here until I just gave up on it and said, I've got to find something else to do. Well, during that time, I would meet people at church and civic organizations such as Rotary or Lions Club or whatever it was, and I would put them into a database. And at the time, I think I was using ACT, and I've just transferred that database into Top Producer, and I've built it up to people whenever they buy a home from me, whenever we've sold a property for them, we put them in the database, and we put them on this newsletter list that we'll send them this once-a-month paper newsletter, snail mail, and we just keep it updated over time. We delete people out of them as they pass away. We delete people out of them if I don't want to work with them anymore, and sometimes that happens. It's not that often, but occasionally you just have a personality clash, and you just say, you know, I didn't enjoy that, and we'll say next and move on. That's the 625 or so people there. We've worked with them in the past. We've either met them at church or a civic organization. Maybe it's my attorney or whatever it is, but that's who's in that sphere of influence newsletter database.
So personal contact is what defines that. If you've made a personal contact with them, then they move into this sphere of influence personal list.
Yes, that's correct.
How do you break out these raving fans then? Who's on that list?
Pretty simple criteria. You've either done multiple transactions with me or you've referred business to me, one or the other. If you do that, then we put you into the raving fan group, and then your benefit is that I've got a list of benefits on my website from free notary service, free faxing service, special invitation to client events, any number of things. And we have folks that will take advantage of it. We've even set up discounts with some of the local restaurants where if they walk into one particular restaurant, you get a free piece of baklava just for showing my raving fan card.
You said there's about 130 people in the raving fan group?
Correct.
Is there crossover? Is the 130 part of the 625 or are those two different groups?
It's a crossover. The 130 is a part of the 625.
You said multiple transactions. If someone just did one transaction with you, do they end up in your raving fans or just in the sphere of influence list?
They could end up in the raving fan group if they referred business to us.
Okay, so it must be either multiple transactions or referral.
Right, because some of the people in our raving fan group have never done a transaction with us, but they've referred a lot of business to us. We've got a lot of folks at my church that they're not moving, and they trust me, and they say they're real connected in the community, and they say, if you want to sell something, call Pat. And I've got some folks that have sent me, I think the most has been 10 referrals out of this one fella, but he's not moving. We've never done a transaction together.
I take that guy to lunch.
Yeah, he's on the top list, that's for sure.
You've talked about some of the things you do. This newsletter is kind of the center stone of your contact, and that is going to go either through snail mail or email. What else do you do to stay in touch with your database?
The snail mail and the email is pretty much it. In the past, we've done some client events where close to my office, we were at another location a few years ago, and the Independence Day parade would go right in front of my office, and we would have a party on the morning of the Independence Day parade. So July 4th, we're setting up in the parking lot with a tent, donuts, orange juice, coffee, and inviting all of our database to come watch the parade from our office parking lot. That was one of the things that we would do. Other things that we've done at the country club, we've had swim days where we invite people out there, and we just have a big party out there in the summertime to go take a dip in the pool, have some hot dogs, hamburgers, and celebrate the summer. So little client events like that, those are the biggest things.
And you said you're not doing those currently, so right now it's basically this newsletter getting out. Do you also make phone calls?
I'm not a big phone call guy, and it really comes down to the amount of time that it takes to do it. I know that I should do it, but with the properties that we manage, the number of appointments that I work on, I just haven't scheduled the time to do it, and I'm not that well-equipped from the personality standpoint to pick up the phone and just talk to people. You know, years ago, when I first got into the business, I found some cassette tapes from a guy named Mike Ferry. Mike's been training real estate agents for many, many years. And one of the things that I figured out about Mike Ferry was that if you're going to do Mike Ferry, you got to be like Mike Ferry. And then you can translate that to Brian Buffini. And if you're going to do Brian Buffini, you really need to be a high I like Brian. I'm not. I'm a high S. I'm great one-on-one when you call me, but when it comes to me picking up the phone and calling you, I'm just not that chatty. And I'm not going to spend a lot of time with you. So I'm just not comfortable picking up the phone and talking to folks about anything except business. And that's where my high C takes over. And we'll go into the business and we'll talk business and we'll have an enjoyable conversation. But it's pretty much business from that point on.
So the majority of your business is coming to you. You've structured that. You've put out marketing so that the leads are coming in. Now they're a warm call and now you're comfortable chatting with them.
Exactly. And again, going back to, I mentioned the Millionaire Real Estate Agent book earlier. In that book, Gary Keller identifies two ways that business can come in. You've got marketing-based or prospecting-based. And my business has been built on marketing-based. And if you think about the way the majority of businesses are structured, the majority of them are marketing-based. Now, some of them, sales organizations, they have a salesman that'll go out and make a pitch. I'm not like that. I'm more like the McDonald's that'll put advertising and marketing out and attract business to me. And once you call me, we're good. We'll work it. And we'll 9 times out of 10 get that business because that's a warm call. I'm very comfortable with it. And the systems that we've put into place are very attractive to the prospect that's calling, whether it be on the property management side or on the sales side. And it's just a system that takes place. Comparatively in my market, very, very few people have a system for doing anything, much less picking up the phone.
Sure. So you've used your C side, your C personality to develop these systems. You do have to get that out, that message out to these folks. So what are you putting in? What message are you putting into your newsletter that's getting them to pick up the phone and call you?
Well, it's a very subtle newsletter. It's a template, and it's provided by a company out of Tucson, Craig Fort from Service for Life. And I've been using this newsletter since 2002, and we've just used it every month. We had a small break for about a year, and during that time where I took the break from that, my business actually went down. So I put it back into place, and the business came back up. But this newsletter has subtle hints in there. Hey, if you need a good, caring, competent real estate agent, call me. And the referrals come in. We'll get anywhere from 5 to 10 referrals a month from our sphere of influence of people who know somebody or they're going to do business themselves. And the contact that we have is that newsletter. It just goes out. The referrals come back in. Our business continues to grow. We're blessed.
Patrick, I just want to ask you real quickly, I understand that you're doing listing appointments in your office. Is that correct?
Yeah, that is correct.
How's that working for you?
It works out so good. It's unbelievable. Last year, in January of 2012, I went to the CRS celebration over in Phoenix, and I heard a lot of the agents talking about doing their listing appointments at the office. And I said, you know, that's something that I could implement right away. So when I came back, we changed our seller interview questionnaire. And when my assistant Pauline does the seller interview, the last question that she has is, Pat, it's actually a statement. It says, Pat wants to meet with you at the office first. What times would work for you on these days? And she'll give them an alternative choice of Tuesday, Thursday, Wednesday at a couple of different times. And then she reinforces that we're going to meet at the office first. Once we've got the commitment on the time, she'll send out a pre-listing packet either via email or via snail mail. We may be doing a priority mail or an overnight of a physical packet. And then the folks will review our information, come to the office when they're physically able to do so. And what I mean by that is that a lot of times we have sellers who are out of town. So if they're out of town, obviously they're not going to fly in to just meet with me. But if they're local, we have them come to the office first, and we'll go through the listing presentation. They've already done so when they walk in. And the amazing thing was that in the past year, out of the listing appointments that I had, 8 out of 10 of them would walk into my appointment, and they would have the paperwork filled out. And I hadn't even met them yet. And they were ready to list with me just having sent the paperwork out to them, asked them to come into the office, and they would come in, and their questions were related to the seller's disclosure notice and a couple of items on there. We wouldn't talk about price or anything else until we had the paperwork signed. And then they'd say, well, what price are we going to put on the house? And then we'll pull up the multiple listing service, do a quick market analysis, come to an agreement on it, sign off on the price, and then we implement the systems to put the house on the market. And I've never even been to the house. It works fantastic, and I encourage everybody to try it.
Wow, that is awesome. So they're filling out the paperwork, signing off on it, bringing it to you. You have not looked at the house yet. You have not set a price. They're doing this strictly based on your systems and your promotion.
Exactly is what it is. Now, going back to our systems, if it's a local seller, somebody that can come into my office, we're going to deliver a physical pre-listing packet to the property. And I've got my assistant, Xenia, who would drive out. She'll drop it off. Or if it's on the far end of town, we'll send it priority mail or overnight mail. And it'll be delivered to them. And we ask them to review that information. The letter inside says, here's the information. Please review it prior to your appointment with Patrick at the office on such and such day. They go through the pre-listing presentation, which basically was the same thing that Russell Shaw would put out in his, and I copied a good part of it, changed it with my statistics and everything else, and it builds up why to use Patrick Tuttle as the agent for selling your home. We also include a blank listing agreement with all of the agreement in there in a white envelope. And on the front of the envelope, it says, seller's homework, please complete prior to your appointment with Patrick. So we're giving them the instructions to do so before they've even sat down to meet with me. And then, whether it's the next day, because I never meet with anybody on the same day, it'll always be at least 24 hours, preferably 48 hours from the time that the phone call comes into the office, because I want them to be able to see the packet, review the information, and then come into the office to sit down with me. And the conversation is literally like this, Mike. So if you walked into my office, you've got the paperwork in hand, I'm going to sit down at the table and say, Mike, I see that you've got the packet of information in your hand. Did you have time to review that? And you'd tell me yes or no. If you say yes, then my question back to you is, great, you ready to put me to work? And that's my presentation. That is literally my presentation. Now, the alternative is, if you walk in and I say, have you had a chance to review the information? And you say, no, I haven't had a chance to review the information. I say, okay, that's fine. Let's do that now. And I'll take you through that pre-listing presentation page by page, all the way up to the frequently asked questions portion of it. And the last thing I'll say is, these are the frequently asked questions. I'll let you take these home and read through those again later, because I don't want to go through and bore you with that. But can you see what separates me from the other agents here in El Paso? And they'll say, yes, we can see that. And I'll say, great. Are you ready to put me to work? And most of the time, they'll say yes. And there's no more questions other than, where do we sign? And then once we've got the listing agreement signed, we'll talk about price.
What percentage of the folks that make it to your office are signing the listing agreement?
90% of the folks that are coming to my office are signing the listing agreement to sell. Some of them we've had to turn over to the rent side because the market didn't support renting. Now, out of the folks that we met with in the last year, we had I think there was only 5 or 6 people that walked away. So it may be more than the 90%, because I know I had 100-plus listing appointments last year. I'm not that great on tracking, but we put, in the calendar year of 2012, I put 96 properties on the market for sale. A lot of those we turned over to lease, and we got them leased. And we ended up selling, I believe it was 46 listings that we had sold out of the numbers that we sent over to you. So that system is working. It is absolutely working in having people come to the office, and it really sets you up as a professional to where they're coming to you as the professional.
Do people ever say, nah, you come out to my house?
They do. Occasionally we'll have somebody that, in fact, I had this just a couple of nights ago where the family, it was a husband and wife, came in to sell the husband's father's house. And he said, we really want you to come in and see the property. And I said, and I really want to see that property. And we'll do that after we've had our initial meeting here at the office, because I want you to understand who we are and what we do. Because if you're not comfortable with who we are and what we do, there's really no need for me to see the property, because I won't be your agent. And he says, that makes sense. We'll see you at the office.
So you're getting everybody to go to the office.
We're getting them to come to the office, and it's fantastic. That's the best idea I've gotten in a long, long time.
How long are your appointments typically taken at the office?
Total time takes about an hour, and that's because we've sent the information out to the prospect. When they walk into the office, if they've already got it filled out, we turn immediately to the MLS and we start looking about pricing models. I've already done an absorption rate analysis to see what the months of inventory are on the market for the target property. But we'll get there and we'll look at the competition. We'll determine what the price is to put it on the market. And we're typically in and out of the appointment inside an hour.
And when you used to go to the house, how much time would you spend on that appointment?
The time on the appointment would typically be about an hour there, but then I would have the travel time to and from, which is time that I could not be doing anything else. So that's the biggest benefit. Geographically, some of the listings that I take are about 30 minutes, 35 minutes away from my office. So I've got half an hour one way. I've got the time sitting there, half an hour back. So it's been a huge time saver to be able to get people to come to the office.
Patrick, why didn't you do this earlier?
I didn't think to do it earlier. I was told that this is the way you do it. My first trainer in my first office, amazing how much the business has changed. She showed me how to measure a house. I can't imagine trying to measure a house these days. But that's how we got trained, and we started out doing the things that we were trained to do. So they taught me that when a seller calls and says, we want you to list our house, you go to the house. What's more unprofessional than that? Doctors don't even do house calls anymore. And if we don't get the business, why did you go?
How did you break that habit?
I just made the decision to do it. And when I came back from Celebration last year, I told my assistant, Pauline, I said, Pauline, we're going to change this question on the seller interview to make it to where you schedule appointments for me here at the office. And she said, okay. She didn't question it. She just did it. And the sellers, they don't question it most of the time, and they'll come to the office. And it puts me and all the other agents that are doing it in the driver's seat, because we are now able to control the environment that we're sitting in. We can't get biased from the granite countertops or the closet that has the shelving system that is so great or whatever it is. You can't get biased on that anymore because you haven't been there to see it. And they can't sell you on their property when you're not sitting in it. So you go to the MLS, you show them what the competition is, and then you get the price set for what the market determines that it needs to be.
I would argue that the reason that you were able to break the habit and break the mold is because you saw another model and you saw proof that the model works when you went to Celebration. You saw that other folks were doing it, and therefore it became real.
I'd agree with that. In fact, last year they had a video of another agent, and I think he was in Alabama. I don't remember the guy's name, but he was showing a video of himself doing seller appointments at the office. And I said, I can do that. And it was so simple to make that one change, and it has just been amazing the amount of time that it has saved me. And it's amazing the respect that the client gives you when they walk into your office instead of you walking in and asking, do I need to take my shoes off as I walk around?
Patrick, let's talk about your team. You've hinted a little bit about it, but let's bring it all together. Please tell me who's on your team. Tell me their titles and what their tasks are. What do they do for the business?
Okay. Well, starting off is my lead assistant, who is Pauline. And Pauline she's my listings and transaction coordinator combined into one. She handles telephone calls, listing input, preparing listing paperwork, and coordinating all the systems that go together for putting a property on the market. The next one is Jessica. She's my property management assistant. She does everything, the same thing as Pauline does, but just does it on the property management side. So anything that goes to a rental goes to Jessica. Then I have Wendy, who is my part-time bookkeeper. Wendy will come in twice a week, make sure that the bills are in order for the property management side. She's the one that processes the rents for the tenants, the payments, and also the payments back to the owner. And then we write checks every 2 weeks to our vendors. She handles that all in about 15 to 18 hours a week. Then I have Zenia, and that's just like the flower, Zenia, Z-E-N-I-A. And she's a part-time marketing assistant who handles a lot of my marketing, which is once the signpost goes up in the yard, she's putting up the QR code for the video that we've done on the property that goes up onto YouTube. She delivers flyers to the property on the inside. And she's somewhat of a general runner. We're also moving her into doing some servicing on short sales, where she handles the Equator side of the short sale business. We've got a couple of them. It's not a big part of our business, but she's doing a great job on that. She works about 20, 22 hours a week. On the agent side of the business, we have Ronnie. And Ronnie is a brand new agent. Her name is Veronica. We call her Ronnie. And she's never closed a transaction. We brought her in to help us out on the rentals, to go show rental properties, and to be able to work with buyers that come through the organization that I just don't have time to work with anymore. And then we've got another lady by the name of Susan. And Susan is an agent. She's been licensed for about 6 years, and all she wants to do is work with buyers. She actually is not on my team. She's kind of a ancillary. She was in my office before I came, and my deal with the office when I came in was that I wouldn't recruit from inside the office, but if I had a way to benefit them and me, that I would refer her out. So she refers me her listings. I refer her buyers. It's a good working relationship, but we consider her a part of our team, even though she has her own independent contractor agreement with RE/MAX Real Estate Group. The next person on our team is my lovely wife, Raja. And Raja is, from a personality standpoint, exact opposite of me. And she has a high I with a secondary D, a very low S, and a very low C. So, I mean, when you say opposites attract, you could look at her and I, and we're pretty much the opposite. Now, Raja works with a lot of the folks that she's known. She's from El Paso. And she knows a lot of folks here, and when there are folks that want to go look out at properties, she's the one to call. She'll take you around. She'll give you the grand treatment. She is wonderful with our buyers, and she loves working with the buyers. She doesn't close a lot of transactions. In fact, she hasn't closed any in the past year. There were a couple of them that she says, I'm the responsibility, and God bless her, I'm going to let her take that. But she is definitely a buyer's agent where, when she has time from away from taking care of our children, she'll be out showing properties with folks and just enjoying the social part of being a real estate agent. And then there's me, and I do pretty much everything else.
How are you compensating this property management assistant? Are you paying a salary, or are you paying a percentage of their revenues? How does that work?
Hourly. My assistants, my unlicensed assistants, are all hourly. and she'll earn a certain hourly rate. She works anywhere from 38 to 40 hours a week, Monday through Friday. If there was a situation where she had to leave the office early to go take care of her children like that, I allow her to come in and work on the weekends if necessary to catch up on some bookkeeping work or something like that. But all of my assistants are hourly. Susan, who is the buyer agent that works with us, we're pretty much just on a referral agreement with her. Ronnie, I've got her on a scenario where I heard one of the agents that you had interviewed earlier last year, and I can't remember which one it was, but I liked the idea. But this agent was saying that they had started paying a base salary of $2,000 a month plus 15% of commissions. And I did the math on that, and it looks like it ought to work. Time will tell whether it's going to be a good scenario. It's been a blessing to have her in the office because whenever we get buyers coming in or if we've got tenant prospects that want to go look at properties, she's all over them and she takes them out, and it's been well worth the money to have her on my payroll. She's been with us for about 4 weeks now, so time will tell how that's going to play out and whether that's going to be a good scenario, paying that base salary of $2,000 a month plus the commissions. And my wife and I, we just, you know, we pay ourselves a salary, and then anything else, it goes into the business, and we'll bonus ourselves out at the end of the year or at the end of the month if we're going on a vacation or something like that.
Okay, so you pay yourself a salary and then some bonus.
That's correct, I do.
Who is licensed on the team?
The licensees are me, my wife Raja, Susan, and Veronica, or Ronnie. They are the agents on the team. Pauline is licensed, but her license is inactive right now. Jessica, who handles my property management, is not, nor is Wendy, nor is Xenia. So we've got four licensed persons that could go out and show property, and then we've got four in the office that can answer phone calls, tell basic information about properties, but they can't go and show properties.
Jessica, your property management assistant, is not licensed.
That's correct. She's not. Now, in Texas, what an unlicensed assistant can do is they can answer the phone, and if somebody says, can you tell me about the property at 123 Elm Street, she can say that it's available and that it's the asking price is X, it has this many bedrooms or whatever. And she could actually open the property. If it's a vacant property, she could open it and let the tenant prospect walk through the property and look at it, but she can't actually walk in and say, this is a bedroom. That's part of what an unlicensed assistant cannot do. She can open it, let the tenant prospect walk through, and then go back to the office and let them fill out an application if they want to. And then I'll review the applications. She will run the background checks on them, and we'll sign a lease with them if they pass the background checks. But as far as showing property, coming through, saying this is the bedroom, this is the kitchen, that's a no-no. We don't allow that.
Patrick, we've been talking about this hybrid organization where you have a sales side and a property management side. And I'm sure there's some agents looking at that and they're wondering to themselves, is this operation profitable?
Yes, we are profitable.
Would you mind telling us what your profit margin is on the entire operation as a percentage of your revenues?
As a percentage of revenues, our profit margin is about 40%.
Very good. So when you say 40%, does that include your salary in the 40%, or is that after you've paid yourself a salary?
That's after I've paid myself a salary. Now, I don't pay myself much of a salary. That's one of the things that when you're looking at your tax structures, we chose, based on our CPA's advice, to pay ourselves a very small salary. And that was because they said, if I don't, the IRS is going to come after me and be asking for a very large check. So far, it's worked out, and if there are any IRS agents on here, my taxes are paid in full.
How have you structured the sales side of your business? Is that also an LLC or a corporation, or do you do that as an individual?
We've got that set up as an S-Corp, which is essentially a sole proprietor, but it just gives you a little bit more level of protection. And all of the expenses end up being a pass-through on the S-Corp. And that was at the advice of our CPA, who's a good friend of ours. And he said, this is the way you want to set this up. Gives you a little bit of protection, allows you to operate as a corporation, but you don't get the double taxation that you would have with a C corporation, where you get taxed at the corporation level and at the individual level as well. So consult your CPA on that. That's what he told us to do. We followed his advice.
Patrick, you've been doing a lot of things. You've pushed yourself into a business that people told you you wouldn't be any good at, and you proved them wrong. What drives you?
You know, there's this little situation that I have where it's called eating, and I like to do that. Years ago, this is when I was getting, when I was transitioning out of this job that I had bought. I'm a Christian, and I want to consult wise people. And one of the people that in my life I consider to be wise is an uncle of my wife. And he's a pastor. He's a missionary. And I sat down with him and I said, look, this is where we are, and I need some advice. I need to know what my calling in life is. And he looked back at me and he said, you know, your calling at this point, you're married, you have two children. And, well, at the time we had one child and we've got two now. He said, you're married, you have one child. Your calling in life is as a husband and a father. And that translates into being a provider. He said, Pat, what you have to do is provide for your family. And at this point, it's less important as to how you do it. Unless, as long as it's honest and it's fair work, it's less important as to what your career is, but you doing it in a way that honors God and honors your family by providing for them. And that was the advice he gave me. Coupled that with the advice of my brother-in-law, who was the real estate broker, I just said, this is what I'm doing, and I'm going to figure it out one way or the other, and I'm going to work hard at it. We're still working hard at it, and I'm thankful that I found the Star Power organization years ago to where I could listen to those interviews with top agents around the country, and I'm thankful that I found your organization and that I can listen to the interviews that you have with top agents around the country, because it is a direct line to the most successful people in this business. Many of them, I'll never get to the level that they are. But if I can get one idea from these people and translate it to my business, then I think it's helpful to me and it's honorable to God to use the talents that I have to be able to serve my family as a provider. And that's what drives me. That's what makes me get up in the morning and come to work and do the best that I can at serving my clients, just the ability to be able to provide for my family.
Why do you think you've been so successful?
Well, I knew that question was coming because I've been listening to your interviews for quite a while, and you asked this question to everybody. And this may surprise you, but I really don't feel like I'm successful. And the reason is because I feel like I'm stable. There's four growth stages that people would go through. And for a long time, we were at the survival growth stage, whereas it was just do everything you can to make sure that the bills get paid. And then if you've got something left over for yourselves, great. God blessed you that month, and you've got a little bit more. The stability part is where I think we are right now, in that we've got good income, we're building some things for our future and for our retirement, and we're building a future for the people that work with us as well. But as far as successful, when I look at the Russell Shaws, the Sam Millers, you know, these guys, I look up to those guys and say, they've got some things figured out where they've got a business that if they walked away, and I've heard Russell Shaw tell this so many times, I can't tell you how long, because I always go back and listen to his interviews. If he walked away and decided to take some time off, he can do that because he's built his business as a business, and it runs itself even when he's not there. When I get to that point, that's where I think I'll be successful. I don't know how far off I am for that, but then I'm going to go to success. And the next step is significance. And the significance part is where you've provided for yourself, you've provided for your family, and you can go out and serve others to the point where you're really giving back to the community, whether it be the local community that you live in or it be to the realtor community that you're serving by doing the mastermind interviews that you're doing. And I consider that you have the significance because you are a top influencer in our market today because of what you're doing with these interviews. You're affecting thousands of people just by asking questions. And that's significant to me and to agents all across this country. And I really appreciate what you're doing for the work that you are doing.
Thank you, Patrick.
Really thank you for doing this, for asking people these questions so that it helps guys like me that haven't got a clue what we're doing.
I think you have more than a clue. You're doing a great job. I'm glad to have you here. Patrick, if you were going to advise a brand new agent just getting in the business, what would you tell them to do first?
I would tell them to get somebody, whether it's a friend or a mentor, have somebody administer a DISC personality assessment to them so that they can find out at the core who are they and what kind of business they would like to be comfortable working with. If they're a high D, high I, cold calling, one-on-one type stuff is great. But if they're a high C, maybe it isn't the right business for them. But if it's a high S like me, okay, find somebody that you can copy and then just figure it out. So I would advise them to take that assessment first and then get good advice on what their personality style is and try to mold a business. And I'm clear about this as a business, not as a job, and I'll distinguish that in here in just a minute. But look at this from a business standpoint and how they can build it into a business. So find out what their personality style is, and then find someone who has a similar personality that is successful or stable, and see if they can copy it. And if they're comfortable copying or working with that person in a role that is as a buyer's agent or as an assistant or whatever it is. But figuring out what they're comfortable doing, whether it be cold calling, working with buyers, working with sellers, or just being an assistant. The next things that I would do is I would advise them to buy 3 books. The first one would be, it's called 21 Things I Wish My Broker Had Told Me. And it's by a guy named Frank Cook. And I bought this book probably in 2003. And it just details things because what your broker, your local broker, is not going to tell you when you get into the business. When I got into this business, I was attracted to a good local company that didn't have a franchise representation, but they had a good reputation, and they had the best split that I could negotiate at 50-50 for any transaction that I closed. So I went with them. But they didn't tell me all this stuff that this book told you. So you need to buy the book and read it, because I'm not going to go through all the 21 things. The next book that you would buy is called The E-Myth by Michael Gerber. It's a fantastic book about business, and Michael Gerber gets it right when he talks about the difference between having a job and having a business. Now, in the office that I'm sitting in, we've got 25 agents who all think they have a business, and 2 of us do. I've got a property management business, and there's another guy that has the business because he's part owner of the company, the RE/MAX office. Everybody else has a sales job in that if they don't sell something, they don't get paid. And that's the biggest difference between having a business that can pay you when you're not there and having a job that pays you when you are there and when you are selling something only. So buy that one as well, The E-Myth by Michael Gerber. Read it. The third book is The Millionaire Real Estate Agent by Gary Keller and Dave Jinks. That book will teach you the 3 L's of the real estate business: leads, listings, and leverage. And once you've read it, read it again, and read it again, and read it again, and learn the principles that are in there and apply them to your business. Those are the things that I would advise a new agent to do. Secondarily, I would tell them to go work with a team. If there's a team in the local market, find one as close to your house as possible and go work with that team, because that team most likely has a structure that they can work within. They have systems for service. They have systems for bringing leads into the business, which is highly valuable. As a brand new agent and you have no leads, you have nothing to do. So if you have someone that can hand you a lead and says, go sell these people a house, serve them, that is highly valuable, even if the split is 15%. It gives you the experience and it gives you income, food on your table. Those are the things that I would advise any of them. And I wish that somebody had given me that advice 12 years ago, because I might have a little bit more of a foothold on the success that I'm looking for and the significance that eventually all of us want to have in this business that we call real estate.
Patrick, do you think that top agent interviews like the one we're doing now with Mastermind Agent are valuable?
For the price that you collect on this, I'd say, Mike, that I get 10 times the value over what I pay for my subscription out of this. It is invaluable. Every agent in this country should be listening to your interviews, and if they can't find yours, they should at least be getting something so that they can pick the brains of top agents across the country. Because if all you're going to do is look in your local market at to what other agents are doing, you'll only be as good as that local market. But we've been able to take ideas from Portland, Oregon, Phoenix, Arizona, Ohio, New York City, and put those ideas in place here in El Paso, Texas, to serve our clients, to serve ourselves, to bring in more leads and more income, and they work. And the good news was that I didn't have to try them out to see if they would work. Other agents did it, and all I had to do was copy it, adapt it to my personality style, and implement it, and it works.
Patrick, I've gotten to the end of the questions I have prepared for today. Is there anything else that you would like to talk about that we haven't addressed?
No, it's been a pretty thorough questionnaire, and I really appreciate what you do, Mike, and the questions that you ask of the other agents that I've had the privilege of listening to those interviews, and I really appreciate what you do, and I highly encourage you to continue to do that, because a lot of people benefit out of this, and I know it takes a lot of time out of your schedule to put it together, but man, we really appreciate what you do in giving us these ideas that we can utilize in our markets.
Well, Patrick, you've done an amazing job of adapting the top agent models to your market and personality. You're determined enough to tell a respected coach you're going to succeed no matter what a personality test says. You've developed systems to leverage your time with people and technology. Your dual operating model of sales and property management is producing spectacular results. Your willingness to break tradition and design a property management company around the desires and needs of landlords is paying off in referrals and a doubling of properties under management. Thank you for sharing your model and being our top agent of the month. And join us next call when we talk to an agent who is an ex-police officer who sold 264 homes last year. Find out who he is on the next Success Call.
You've been listening to Success Calls on the Mastermind Agent Network, where top real estate agents from across North America reveal their success secrets, strategies, and systems in up-close and personal interviews. You can find all the calls at www.mastermindagent.com.